I'm Jason.
And I'm Luke.
We're the guys from That Film Stew, and this is our latest episode where we look at some of the most recent news stories from the world of film and television.
In today's show, let's fucking go. The new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine has been released. Actually, there's a bunch of trailers to discuss, including Mufasa, The Lion King, Transformers 1, and Trap. And who saw this coming 28 years later?
Before we get into it, make sure you subscribe and download this podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find us, and feel free to leave us a review.
And follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as That Film Stew Podcast.
So Luke, how about you kick things off? What is our first movie topic?
The new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine has been released. I've said it once, I'll say it again. Let's fucking go. This trailer...
We've hit our cap of F-words.
This trailer went hard. They want you to know what this movie is, tonally. And wow, I was not prepared.
Yeah, look, I'll get the negative stuff out of the way because there's a lot to love. There's definitely so much to love in here. I'm so excited. I just want to communicate that first. But I feel like they're going a little bit heavy on the, you know, on the F-bombs. It's like, it kind of takes the power of the word away, and that when it felt like almost every sentence or every bit of dialogue was like, F-bomb, F-bomb, F-bomb. It seemed like a lot, and it was kind of like, I don't know, it kind of took me out of it a bit. I was like, I get what they're doing. They're really trying to sell that it's like, yes, we've got the R rating. We're doing it. It's, yeah. It was a bit much, but
I think it's intentional. And, you know, talking about this trailer, like, we've done nearly 500 episodes. I don't think ever said the F-bomb before on the podcast, and I've said it twice, but it relates to this trailer.
It's a contextual thing.
Absolutely. I said it's setting the tone, and I think they've purposely gone hard with this particular trailer. I don't think we're getting 2 hours of that. There's going to be a lot more to this movie than that. But I think they purposely wanted to come out hard with this trailer. It would be too much if the whole movie was that. But it really does snap you out of what we've seen recently, or from the whole time that we've been watching the MCU. Like, they're showing us that this is going to be a different experience. And I'm okay with that. But I do see where you're coming from. It is a bit much with all the swearing, but we do get some really cool visuals. We get our first look at Emma Corrin as Cassandra Nova. She's made a base out of Ant-Man's skull with a collection of X-Men villains. That's fun. Are you familiar with Cassandra Nova?
Like, 100% no. No idea. But she looks pretty nifty in this.
And you might have noticed that she's bald. And who else is bald in the X-Universe? Charles Xavier. See, Cassandra, she is his unborn twin sister. It's weird, man. Comics. She's like a parasite life form. She was born bodiless on the astral plane. She possesses vast mutant telepathic powers, including the ability to exit the womb and create a body. And she's completely psychotic. So that's who she is. It's
do you
crazy,
reckon this
man.
Movie, like, hang on, do you reckon this movie will delve into her character that much and have all of that? Or do you reckon they'll take a few liberties with what they present to us there? I mean, that's pretty
out there. But X-Men is, and you know, this is an X-Men movie, but oh man, but there's, anyway, that's her. So that's who the big bad is, but they may make some changes like they've been known to do over at Marvel Studios. Did you see that side-by-side comparison where they showed the fight between Deadpool and Wolverine? And it mimicked exactly the fight between Peter Parker and Flash Thompson from the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie.
Like, I saw that, and I've seen, the side-by-side sort of videos that people put out. I was kind of just thinking, you know, because sometimes you watch certain things and it's unintentionally you do get sort of replications of certain scenes, it's sequences. Perfect. And things.
I know, but it's not a coincidence.
It is pretty bang on, though, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. So, yeah, like,
it's an intentional choice to replicate that scene. I mean, okay. I don't really see what the point is of it, though. Like, I don't know, unless there's a whole bunch of dialogue that goes along with it, where it's like, you know, like my, if Deadpool says, you know, like my fist breaking your face, that's an axe or whatever. I don't know. Like, what's the joke there? Is there, I don't know.
It could be an example of more things that we're getting in the movie where they are gonna maybe not call it out. It could be something that only hardcore fans pick up on. They may reference other scenes from other Spider-Man movies, but what's or other Marvel movies, should I say? But what's interesting, though, is everything that we've heard about kind of nods to the Marvel Fox movies. You know, whether it be Elektra, the other X characters, whereas this is a Sony Spider-Man film. The referencing could be much wider, and I'm hoping, because come on, I'd love to see Nick Cage the Ghost Rider one more time. Bring him back.
Look, I mean, my expectations is that, like, this movie is going to be bonkers, and I'm under the impression that what we have seen so far is probably like the earliest parts of this movie. At least that's what I'm hoping anyway. I mean, we do see the first like footage of, you know, Hugh Jackman back as Wolverine, rocking the yellow suit, sleeveless at a certain point, you know, like, Badass. It's good. It's cool seeing the two of them side by side interacting, like their whole, you know, like almost like the fake real life feud that Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman have brought to screen with these two characters. Like, it's going to be great. It's going to be a load of fun. You know, like, the trailer ends with them, like you said, like they're, and can I say it a third time just because I want to say it once? Let's fucking go. Like, them jumping through what looks like, you know, like a Doctor Strange kind of portal thing. Are they multiverse jumping? Are they time traveling? What are they doing? What's happening there? Like, but that's sort of like, where are they going? I think after that point, that's where we get into the crazy wackiness of what this movie potentially could be. Like, this could be more multiverse of madness than we got in Multiverse of Madness. Like, this really could be what I think people were hoping for from that Doctor Strange film.
I mean, I'd say so. I mean, the main thing we got from Doctor Strange was the world with the Illuminati. And I think, and as good as that was, people were thinking it was going to be more than that. But you're right. I mean, this is the movie that more than like, well, from what we've seen, from, you know, what we've heard, it definitely is going to be doing that. Did you notice the Rob Liefeld joke in the trailer?
It was very subtle, wasn't it?
It's subtle. Yeah, it's where they're in the street, there's debris, and then behind them, there's a shop front, and it says Liefeld Feet, and there's two little footprints, you know, on the sign there. And, you know, Rob Liefeld, you know, famously co-created Deadpool. He was the artist on the book and often gets criticized for his inability to draw feet. And he'll often draw characters stood behind things. So he doesn't have to draw feet. He draws little pointy feet. And, you know, like,
that's a deep cut kind of joke there.
Which I love. And that's what I'm thinking this movie is going to be. It's going to have it's going to be broad in its humor, in its action, and then it's going to get references that casual fans are going to get. And I think it's going to go deeper, probably more than any other MCU movie. But this is a fun joke that Rob Liefeld himself approved. Like, they didn't just do it. So he was in on it. He was there the day they shot that scene. So it's all fun. You know, nobody's, you know, mean-spirited about it. But I thought it was a fun gag.
Yeah. And look, don't get me wrong. Like, the humor in this trailer is, you know, besides, like, the overuse of the F-bomb, which, like you said, probably just for this trailer. I don't think it's going to be, like, just constant, because that would just get annoying. But the humor in this movie, I think they're gonna have so much fun with this, and I think with the references, the cameos, the multiverse level stuff that they're gonna do, I think because they can do it in a realm of comedy, it's gonna play a lot different and I think they can just do wacky stuff. Like this, not necessarily because of this trailer, but I think just the past couple weeks of, I think, just talking about Deadpool and Wolverine, this trailer obviously as a factor, but I started to get to this real, I'm super duper pumped kind of level for it, where I haven't felt that way for a Marvel film in, dare I say, years. Like I've been looking forward to some of them, been like, yeah, cool. But I think I'm finally back to like, holy shit, this comes out in July. That's so far away. That feeling. And I haven't had that feeling in a while. And that's a good place to be, I think. It also sucks because
I'm there with away, you. But I mean, 5 years ago, we got Avengers Endgame. How insane is that? That was five years ago.
5 years.
I know.
But you know the time jump in Endgame? You know where it says, you know, like 5 years later. What? We're at that point.
We are at that point. And after
to the jump.
After Endgame, we did get Spider-Man No Way Home, and you know, there was things to get excited about with that movie. But I'm with you. Like Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. I was there opening weekend, but I wasn't like we are now with Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, oh, how many months? Oh, I can't wait to watch it. So yeah, no, it definitely has been a long time, but we're there now. And I'm not sure if you're watching it. I'm thinking the answer's still no. But X-Men 97 on Disney Plus is perfection. I'm absolutely loving it. So we've only got 3 episodes left, but watching that weekly and knowing that Deadpool and Wolverine is just around the corner, we're getting some really good Marvel content at the moment.
I will get to it, I promise. I think with 3 episodes left, yeah, okay. Time to get my ass in gear. And
it's a 3-parter. It's a 3-part finale. Ooh. Yeah, so there we go.
I have heard that like a lot of the stories like move fairly quickly though. Like they're just churning through potentially arcs that could have lasted multiple episodes, but I guess it's just something different that they're doing with it.
No, don't listen to whoever said that.
Okay.
Just tune in and watch it. And even if they are touching on certain storylines, they're not just burning through anything. Like, things can be touched on and come back to. It's worth your time. I know you're going to watch it.
Right.
Anyway, we've spent a lot of time talking X-Men, Deadpool. We should probably move on.
Let's see if we can talk about this trailer for just as long. Let's try not to. The Mufasa trailer. We've got our first look at the live action. I'm not going to call it actually. Scratch that. The photorealistic CGI animated prequel to The Lion King. I mean,
yeah,
that's what it is. It's 100% animated. It looks amazing. Like it looks
Real. I'm just checking my notes. Nope, it definitely says live action, but now you're right.
That's what you wrote. That's what you wrote. And you're wrong. Mate, this looks pretty. My anticipation for this was not very high, but watching this visually, I'm like, look, it looks beautiful. And then I think it just kind of brought it home that it's like, hey, look, this is going to be a story that much unlike the, what was it, 2018, I believe, or was it 2019? That Lion King film, it was the same movie with some changes that I didn't really like because they're minor changes and they just kind of bugged me, but it was essentially the same movie. This is going to be a new story that we haven't had before. You know, looking at Mufasa and Scar, I forget what his name is in this, but yeah, like I'm kind of excited now because it looks good. It looks so pretty. What surprised me though is that, you know, when the cast credits come up, you know, you've got Donald Glover's back, Beyonce's back, you see Timon and Pumbaa in this trailer, Seth Rogen's back voicing. I think, is it Billy Eichner? I think his name popped up. So they're all back. Like, are we going to get like a bookended thing, you know, post The Lion King, and then this movie is then a flashback, or is there something else going on? I don't know, but that's intriguing as well.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Donald Glover and Beyonce return as parents, King Simba and Queen Nala. So I think you're right. Maybe that's what they're looking at doing.
And apparently we've got, well, we know that Blue Ivy Carter is making her feature film debut and apparently going to be the voice of Princess Kiara. So, I mean, everything sort of pointing towards we are going to get at least somewhat of like a sequel element to this prequel, which is kind of intriguing.
It genuinely
wasn't something I was anticipating.
I've never heard of this kid before, Blue Ivy Carter, but I'm sure she got this movie on her own merits. It's got nothing to do with the fact that her mum's Beyonce. I mean, what an acting debut to be in his big Disney movie. Wow.
I'm just going to very quickly look up the age of Blue Ivy Carter.
How old is she?
She was born in 2012.
She's 11, 12.
Early teens, yeah. All right, all good. In my head, I was like, she's like two. Wasn't she just born? But, you know, that's okay. But, sorry, what are your thoughts on Mufasa, the Lion King?
Oh, yeah, yes. You did all the talking. He looks like the Lion King. And as soon as it starts, you get that famous song from The Lion King, and you have that immediate feeling of, ooh, I like this. Because, you have that association with that original movie.
I like The Lion King, yeah.
And, I enjoyed the last movie they did, the photorealistic animated movie, how did you put it? I enjoyed that one, this looks good, you know. Yeah, I'll watch it. I just really like the cartoon. That first cartoon that they did, that one still holds up for me. But yeah, this looks fine. And The Lion King, it made so much money, didn't it? Was a no-brainer. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, Jon Favreau is not back directing this one. We've got Barry Jenkins in the director chair bringing this to us. Now, might not be a household name, but like, movies such as Moonlight, If Beale Street Could Talk, like, this guy is, like, he is a somebody bringing this. So this isn't just some guy that's, you know, like, oh, we need a director and someone who can just, you know, point the camera and tell people what to do. Like, this is a guy that has some skills. So, I mean, that's something to look forward to as well. There's got to be something there.
Yeah, and again, like that first one, I'm sure it'll do fine at the box office. And that, you know, the last one definitely found an audience. And yeah, again, looks good. It does look good. Anyway, the Transformers 1 trailer sees a young Optimus Prime and Megatron team up to save Cybertron. I did not know what to expect from this movie. I'd seen that first poster, some character posters. The casting of Chris Hemsworth as Optimus Prime. And we found that out a long time ago. So I do not know. I still don't know, to be honest. This is not what I expected. So we've got some Transformers on Cybertron that can't transform. You've got Optimus Prime, Megatron, but they've got different names. The buddies, I guess they're going to have a falling out at some point. You've got Scarlett Johansson as a Transformer. Keegan-Michael Key as Bumblebee. It looks interesting, but I'm not a big Transformers guy. I had some toys as a kid. I read the crossover comic they did with Ghostbusters, and I've seen the Michael Bay movies. That's pretty much the extent of my knowledge. What did you think to this trailer?
I mean, look, didn't know what to expect. Look, I'll address the Chris Hemsworth voice thing. It doesn't sound like Chris Hemsworth, which I think is good. There's still like a deep sort of could be a young Peter Cullen kind of voice. So I'm like, okay, good, good. But obviously, yeah, quite a young sounding Optimus Prime. Look, the vibes I'm getting from this, I think I'm going through the same sort of feelings when I was like, I first saw the first, trailers for Into the Spider-Verse or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, where it's like, oh, okay, this isn't just like, hey, we're doing an animated film. Like, we're doing something different here. And then there's almost like a coming of age element to it. We've got these young characters sort of discovering themselves and, you know, like learning the power and, you know, saving the world and all that kind of stuff that you get with it. There could be a pretty neat story here if it's done well. So on that aspect, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of into it. On the other side, on the Transformers side, like, again, I'm not the hugest, like, hardcore fan like yourself, but, like, I know enough about Transformers, you know, like, watched most of the, you know, the original Generation 1 cartoon and, you know, like, the Michael Bay movies and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, I don't know, like, a Transformers born on, you know, Cybertron and they have to earn the ability to transform. Is that a thing? The character designs are kind of wacky that I definitely need. They're not horrendous, but I definitely need a bit of time to get used to it. I don't know. I'm very indifferent about this. Like, I see potential, but I'm also like, yeah, what is this? It's weird and it makes me uncomfortable.
You know when they go to that big transformer and he gives them their power and then they transform? He sounds like Peter Cullen. And I'd be very surprised if it wasn't Peter Cullen. I'm interested, but, you know, you mentioned, you know, Into the Spider-Verse and Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. They were doing something strikingly different with the animation style. Whereas we've not seen Transformers look like this on the big screen before, but at the same time, like, it looked pretty, I mean, it looks perfectly fine. Like, it's good, but I don't know. I thought when they first announced, like, okay, so we're going to continue doing live action Transformers, but we're going to do some animated movies. I just thought they were going to go in a different direction with, like, a unique style. But again, it looks fine. It just looks standard.
I think it's like, it's unique. And it's not to the level of, like, craziness, like, you know, like Mutant Mayhem or Into the Spider-Verse, but I think, you know, like, you look at the Transformers cartoons, especially the modern ones, and, like, you know, they've either gone, it's really crummy CGI look, or, you know, quite a 2D looking, just very simplistic stuff. And, like, I haven't really rated the types of animation they've used. So I think a mic track, my brain was going down those kinds of avenues. But I think what we're seeing animation quality wise, I'm like, oh, okay, look, there is something fun here. And there's a bit of stylized stuff. But then when you get to the character designs, that's where I'm like, yeah, this is a bit wacky. And again, there's that uncomfortable feeling. But like you, I'm interested enough, I think, at this point. Let's see what else they bring us.
I'm pretty sure it's been 40 years since we've had an animated Transformers film on the big screen. So it's time.
That doesn't help. Like, that doesn't, like, if the previous example was that movie.
A very popular one. Transformers the movie. Hey, it's got a big fan base.
The movie where they killed all the Autobots.
Most of them, yeah.
Like, what was it, the first 10 minutes or so? Because we need new toys to sell.
Absolutely. So they needed to kill off the old toys to introduce new ones.
Just terrible.
It's a business.
Well, speaking of killing and stuff, yeah. All right. Josh Hartnett plays a serial killer trapped at a pop concert in the first trailer for M. Night Shyamalan's Trap. As we've said previously many a times on our shows, that M. Night Shyamalan did have a bit of a weird pocket of time when his movies were kind of shit. But he had a bit of a renaissance.
He's
starting with, like, The Visit.
The Visit, yeah.
Old, you know, like, he's had some good stuff. Split. Glass was, I think, pretty good for what
I think
it was.
He went The Visit, Split, and he did Old after, and then maybe Glass. Because I remember
something like that.
Because, you know, we did a review of The Visit. I think the anticipation of him potentially coming back with a good movie, and then we didn't plan on reviewing Split, and I just went to watch it opening weekend. And then you get that cliffhanger and you're like, big reveal at the end, that M. Night Shyamalan twist. I was like, I'm not going to tell you why, but we need to review this. And we did. But that was him, him coming back. But before I'd even seen the trailer, I mean, you've said it already, Josh Hartnett playing a serial killer, trapped at a pop concert. I'm like, oh, I feel like I know what the movie is and I've not even seen the trailer. And it's a great trailer. It really, really is.
You know how, like, Shyamalan's obviously known for, you know, his twists and stuff. this is a trailer that kind of, I mean, potentially there's another twist or there's more to it, but
I would say
it kind of reveals its twist very early in the movie, I'd imagine.
Which is a twist.
Which is a twist. There could be more. I almost kind of wish, though, that I hadn't watched this trailer, like, and not known that Josh Hartnett was who he is, because the trailer kind of plays, you know, like, it plays the story out. In the beginning, him and his daughter are at this pop concert, very, like, Taylor Swift, like some sort of megastar, you know, has the world, you know, eating out of the palm of her hand, like that kind of craziness. They're there. Then, you know, like the dad goes off to, you know, what's he doing? He's just going to the toilet or he's getting some snacks or whatever he's doing. And then, you know, there's basically like a, almost like a lockdown. Oh my God, there's this serial killer out and about. And then reveal, he's the serial killer. What?
So what that tells me, that's what you need to know going into the film. But that's not right. All the film's going to be. So that just seems like important information. Yeah. That's that, out there. Like, but that
would have been a fun reveal. If that's movie. They'd be like, what the hell?
If that's all the film is, whereas that is the plot description for the movie and that's the trailer. So that's going to be intentional. Like, is it a point now where he's still making movies of a certain budget and he's having success again, which, you know, we're very happy about, but he's going to have control. He's writing, directing, producing. Like, these are his films. So nobody's put this trailer out without his consent. Right. I think it's all going to be part of it. And it's kind of like he's setting the stage. This is what you need to know going in. And then the film, I'm hoping, more than likely, is going to be more than that. There's going to be more twists and turns, and there's going to be more things going on. But essentially, what we're getting...
actually knows... And she.
Well, don't try and spoil it. Don't try and spoil it. Don't try and spoil it. But it's like, I mean, I've never seen this done before. A serial killer trapped at a pop concert. It's like, already I'm like, well, I've not seen that before. And Josh Hartnett, like, I'm really glad that he's back as well. Talking about M. Night Shyamalan being back. Josh Hartnett, we saw him, you know, in Oppenheimer. He's been doing some movies with Guy Ritchie. Yeah, he's someone that I've always liked, and it's good to see him back. And this is his movie. I'm into it.
I mean, I'll be there. Absolutely. Like, it looks cool. Good. And again, what's next? What's after that? It's, you know,
Story-wise or M. Night Shyamalan? We can't keep talking about his career.
No. Oh, we'll go to the next story. Yeah, I got nothing more to say.
Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and Ralph Fiennes are to star in 28 Years Later. Daniel Boyle will direct and Alex Garland will write the first film in a planned trilogy. It has been so many years since 28 Days Later with Cillian Murphy, and then we got 28 Weeks Later, and all these years later, we're getting 28 Years Later.
I mean, it hasn't been 28 years though, has it?
It would have been nice if they hung on a little longer. It hasn't.
Yeah, I feel like they were close. Probably maybe 5 years. They probably would have hit it.
Maybe that's when they'll wrap the trilogy. Maybe they'll, because it's going to be the 28 Years Later trilogy, isn't it? So maybe that's the plan. Mm. It's a weird one with these films though, because both Days Later and Weeks Later are Fox movies. Only here in Australia, 28 Days Later isn't available on Disney Plus, and not only that, it isn't available digital anywhere. 28 Weeks Later, Disney Plus, no bother. But you can't go back and watch that first Cillian Murphy movie. It isn't available anywhere in Australia.
You know, I don't have to, I don't have that problem. Do you know why?
You've got them both on DVD. You've got the DVD.
I've got the DVDs.
So, see, you planned ahead. You planned ahead.
With this announced trilogy that's come, like, I kind of like the fact that it was days, weeks, and now they're doing years. Like, I like that. To know that it's now the start of a trilogy, I'm like, oh, well, that kind of breaks it, because I feel like the fourth movie really needs to be, I mean, like 28 decades later? What comes after years?
Too far. Because then it's sci-fi. I mean, I guess it is kind of horror, sci-fi.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, it'd be like a Jason X kind of, like they're in space.
Great cast, though. Great cast. So yeah, let's watch part one, then part two, part three, and then make up our minds.
All right. So there were our main stories. On to some other, I guess, some minor things, but we'll brisk through these.
Pruitt Taylor Vince has been cast as Jonathan Kent, a.k.a. Pa Kent, in James Gunn's Superman, while Neva Howell has signed on to play Martha Kent. I mean, just when you thought they had cast this movie, they're casting even more. But this is nice, though. Marvin Pa Kent.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to know that, you know, we'll get these characters. How long will, you know, Pruitt Taylor Vince, you know, stick around? Don't know. Maybe.
You know,
maybe they'll do a spin on it where he, you know, he does hang around, much like Lois and Clark.
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn. It works for me either way, to be honest. But whether this is going to be like having flashbacks and you're going to see him in Smallville, who knows? But Pruitt Taylor Vince, he was in Constantine with Keanu Reeves in 2005. So there's his DC connection. That's the other DC movie that he was in. But yeah, bit of trivia for you there.
Yeah, he's kind of like one of those faces where it's like you recognize him, you've seen him in things, but he's never had, I don't think he's had like the spotlight on him. Where
he hasn't. And this movie isn't going to be that either. Do you know what is a really good movie with him? The John Cusack psychological thriller Identity. You seen that?
Oh, right.
Oh, man. I love that movie. Yeah. That is a good film. You know what,
I have it. I can't even think of who he is in that. That's the problem, well, isn't it?
I'm not going to spoil it because anyway, I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, well, yeah.
He ends up playing a big part in that one. Anyway, moving on. If anyone's listening and they haven't seen that old movie from, I think, the early, in fact, no, maybe the 90s. Was it the late 90s? Early 2000s?
I want to say 2003.
I mean, that is, tells me. That sounds pretty specific.
It's an accurate. Specific. All right. Disney confirms Jeff Bridges will officially return for Tron Ares in a new behind the scenes picture. I mean, let's be honest. However you feel about that second film.
Love it.
Well, good.
I really
Tron
do.
Tron
is a
Tron without Jeff Bridges. Like, I feel like you need to have this guy in there. Hopefully he isn't just a weird CGI version of himself in this one. Which doesn't look like he's gonna be.
Have you heard? Because he's been talking about that actually, and he's gone back and had a look at, you know, when they digitally de-aged him, and he reckons that in Tron Legacy he looks more like Bill Maher than he does himself. That's what he's been saying when he's been doing press for a current project. And yeah, he's been talking about Tron Ares, and he's coming back. You can't have Tron without Flynn. So I'm really glad that Bridges is coming back, and you've got cool behind the scenes picture, and it's just him holding the script looking cool.
Yeah.
I really do love Tron Legacy, though. Daft Punk, their soundtrack, I've got to be honest,
this
is a big part of it. But I do love the film anyway.
There's a lot to like, and when I say, like, you know, there's visuals and stuff that are pretty cool. The de-aging stuff, like, we weren't ready for that. we're not there yet.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it at the movies, but I was there for it and I really did enjoying it. But recently watching it again at home on a smaller screen, yeah, it doesn't look great. It's really not aged well.
I thought you were going to say, on a smaller screen, it's not that bad.
I mean, it does look better, but, you know, they weren't there yet when they made that movie. So let's see what they do with the new one. Pamela Anderson has signed on to star opposite Liam Neeson in Paramount Pictures' untitled remake of Naked Gun, of course, based on the crime spoof comedies that were released in the late 80s and early 90s. I love those movies. Love those movies. The TV show Police Squad, really enjoyed that as well. And then they did those three movies after that. So much fun.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the Pamela Anderson casting, and it's not necessarily a knock on her specifically, but I feel like when she has popped up in like films, let's say, like when I say recent, like the past couple of decades, they've been like parody spoof movies, but they've been the shit ones.
She's in Scary Movie in the first one.
Is she in the first
one? No, not the first one. She's not in the first one. Was it the second one? It's the second one, isn't it? Where they're watching The Ring. Yeah.
That'd be the third one then.
She's in the third one. Sorry, Pamela. Yeah. Yeah, she's in the third one.
After that, doesn't she pop up in like I don't know if it's a superhero movie or like date movie or something. I don't know. She's in the
I think she might be in superhero movie, actually. I think she's playing Sue Storm. Anyway, Naked Gun, good movies. And I think we both landed the same here. Liam Neeson is a great fit for the Naked Gun movies. And, you know, whereas Leslie Nielsen had Priscilla Presley, Liam Neeson's going to have Pamela Anderson. I'm glad that they've not gone, because I'm assuming she's going to be the love interest. If we're looking at what they did with those previous movies, I'm glad they've not gone for someone ridiculously young to star alongside Liam Neeson. And she's still younger than him, don't get me wrong, but probably more age appropriate.
Yeah, and the comparison's obviously like the Priscilla Presley kind of performance. Like, she was playing like oblivious, ditzy kind of, but still kind of getting it done kind of character. So it was like, there was almost like playing it straight, but like a very absent-minded kind of individual, which kind of worked. I'm worried that like, if Pamela Anderson is playing like that equivalent and is the love interest, that like, I guess like just from what I've seen of her, like she plays the ditzy, absent-minded, but like too far in that direction, rather than like, I don't know, Priscilla Presley was able to just sort of reel it in a bit, but she might not even be playing the love interest. Maybe yeah, she's playing, true. I'm thinking like, you know, the third Naked Gun, how they're, I can't remember the character's name, but you know, the blonde bimbo one that was kind of with the, you know, with the bad crew. Maybe Anna, she's going to play Anna, a character like that.
Anna Nicole Smith. That's what that is.
That's what it was. Yes. Yes. I was more thinking, I couldn't think of the character's name, but yes.
I've got no idea what the character. I mean, it's been a while. I rewatched the first one just the other day, actually. It's always good for a laugh. But no, it's been a while since I've seen.
Nice beaver.
I know. It's been a while since I've seen 33 and a third, The Final Insult. It's been a few years.
Yeah. Oh, it used to be great, just because they had a dinosaur at the start. But anyway.
But again, like they're saying that she's starring opposite. So I'm assuming she, anyway.
I would guess love interest. All right. Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan, and Ben Kingsley have been cast in the much-anticipated film adaptation of the best-selling novel, The Thursday Murder Club. Now, how much anticipated are we talking?
Massive.
Trio are set to play amateur sleuths Elizabeth, Ron, and Ibrahim, yep, respectively, who will play Joyce, remains a mystery for now. I have no idea what this is.
This is huge.
I'm in my own bubble.
In the UK and in this house, in my house, my wife is a massive fan. Richard Osman, you'd know him from Pointless, like various other things. And he's been writing these novels. I think he's on maybe book four. Massively popular. You know, I'm talking, you know, record-breaking number one bestseller. I'm looking at my desk here. I've got the first book that I'm currently reading. Yeah, honestly, it is great. Pierce Brosnan, one of the cool-looking guys around, that's not how the character is described in the book, so maybe they're going in a different direction. But the cast is incredible. I mean, so far, they've cast a dame, a sir, a Bond, and potentially, right, fan favorite to play Joyce is Judi Dench. They would have two dames. Two dames.
Who is Joyce? Like,
so Joyce, kind of, she's one of the main characters. Yes, you got your four main characters in the book. Elizabeth would be the main character. She's been played by Helen Mirren. But Joyce is the other character that make up the four. But again, like, massively, massively popular. There's a podcast that I'm listening to that I really enjoy. It's an entertainment podcast that comes out each week. And Richard Osman, he's one of the hosts on the podcast. And I'm blanking on the name. It's called The Rest Is Entertainment. And on a recent episode, so before this story was reported online, so at the beginning of the episode, he's like, oh, I'm going to announce the casting of my movie, The Thursday Murder Club. And then at the end of the episode, he dropped all the names and then all the news outlets were reporting on it. So it was really cool for me finding out in that way. What we've not mentioned, this movie is going to be on Netflix. It is the second film in a deal between Amblin and Netflix. So produced by Steven Spielberg, the movie will be written and directed by Chris Columbus. Honestly, I know you're finding out about this movie and these books for the first time now, but I can see this being a big deal. Really can. So watch this space.
Well, you're selling me with, like, you know, Spielberg, Columbus. Like, it's all,
it's not bad, is it?
And obviously, this is a murder mystery type thing. So sort of like a,
absolutely. And it's the whole thing.
The list examples, you know what they are.
The whole thing is going to be shot in the UK. It's based in the UK. I'm very excited. So from the writer of The Goonies, the director of Home Alone, and Chris Columbus has done various other things, Harry Potter and all that good stuff.
I know we're spending a bit longer than we anticipated on this, but have the books had a lot of success, like, outside the UK?
Yeah, worldwide.
US,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and good. Okay.
Amblin aren't interested. If for something that's popular in the UK, it needs to be. I mean, I'm here in Australia. I go to the bookstores here, and this is where I've been buying the books from. They're readily available. Anyway, stop.
You can buy the books. Well done.
Okay. Moving on.
This last one here. Russell Crowe's at it again. This ain't a sequel. This ain't anything like that. But he's facing possessed stuff, doing some exorcism things in The Exorcism. And we've got a trailer for this. So this is not The Pope's Exorcist.
It's weird, man.
Like that, but it's weird, right? Because that
it
was...
It is. Just a couple of years ago. Maybe not his last movie. Oh, maybe. No, it can't have been. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I think he's done a couple in between then. But if you put the posters side by side... This one, The Exorcism and The Pope's Exorcist, it looks like this is the next film in that series.
I'm pretty and sure he's wearing the same thing from the costume department. Like, he's probably just like, I've got one. It already fits me. Let me just bring that.
Yeah, but the difference is, right, he is a man of God in The Pope's Exorcist, but in this one, The Exorcism, he is an actor playing a man of God in a movie. There's the difference. But then real demonic forces seem to be present and going after him, and weird stuff's happening, and Niles from Frasier is in here. It looks cheaper than The Pope's Exorcist. Honestly, why did not people turn up for that movie? I've watched it a couple of times now. I thoroughly enjoyed The Pope's Exorcist. And that thing that Crowe does, cuckoo, when he sees the nuns, and he's got his little Vespa. Ah, oh, there's so much to like about that film, but...
So many Vespa shots.
Yeah, but it
would be cool is it's if been and in gone, this movie, film. You know how they're making a movie in this movie? If they were making The Pope's Exorcist.
Oh, mind blown. Mind blown. But I did...
then I was like... All this freaky shit happens.
I did notice in the opening, you do see the Shudder logo. So, oh, okay. So, yeah. It doesn't look as though it's got as much money or polish as The Pope's Exorcist, but it looks like it could be interesting. It's just a weird thing for him to do, like, so close together, exorcism movies.
But like you said, he's... playing an actor in this one. So, and I think we always have fun, you know, like watching movies about movies being made and things like that. A lot of self-aware humor and stuff. Yeah.
I'll check it out. And I've mentioned Shudder, like a couple of movies, you know, that you would see on Shudder I've enjoyed. Late Night with the Devil, Destroy All Neighbors, the Alex Winter movie. So there's a handful of movies.
I will say, because I feel like we never really addressed, but like as a movie like this trailer, what it's presenting, you know, look, a lot of it seems to be a little like, you know, run of the mill sort of thing. But you know, I'm getting enough sort of like, oh yeah, you know, it looks pretty creepy, pretty freaky. Some cool little. It looks like a fun little, you know, little horror movie. And again, if it's something that we can watch at home and not even have to go to the cinema for, it's perfect, like Friday night, Saturday night thing. Watch with the wife; she'll be happy. Yeah, it looks fine.
Yeah, I think it is like Late Night with the Devil. It's probably one that will get a limited theatrical release, and then you'll be able to stream it. Mm.
All right, well, that's it for all the movie news, but we've, as always, got some TV news stories for you.
Well, this is good news for you. I've not seen it yet, still. Fallout has officially been renewed for season 2 at Prime Video, and get this. Fallout had 65 million viewers in the first 16 days of the series launch. Huge!
That's good.
It is good. Yeah, that sounded like a Bruce Almighty quote.
It's good.
Oh, man, he was really trying to make those quotes happen in that movie. A bit too hard. But anyway, we're here to talk about Fallout. Yeah, season 2. I mean,
you know how I feel about Fallout. Like, had a great time. I've now, I think I recommended it before I'd actually finished that first
You recommended
season,
it last time, yeah.
Was it? And when? And yes, since then, I've now finished the show. Yeah, it's great, man. Like, it's a lot of fun. It's I think it's exactly what, you know, like the show makers wanted it to be in adapting the game. Like, it's a lot of fun. And where it ends off, like, absolutely, you want to know what happens next. There's more story to tell. It doesn't wrap up in a way where it's like, oh, cool, like, if we don't get any more, I'm satisfied. It's like, no, there's definitely so much more to get into. So, I mean, all right, yeah, and it's been a big hit, so no surprise that season 2 is coming. Another season 2 that we're getting, My Adventures with Superman, and here we go. We've got another trailer. This one's a bit shorter, obviously a TV trailer. Comes with its very own TV narrator, which is cool. I never finished that first season, I'll admit. Not for any particular reason. I was enjoying the show. It just kind of fell off my radar. But this looks like, from what I've seen of this introduction of Lex Luthor, you know, there seems to be like the actions there. It seems much of the same of the first season, again, in a good way. But you'd probably have a bit more refined thoughts on it.
Yeah, Jay and I reviewed it. It sounds like comics. And I'll say it here. We both gave it 5 out of 5. It is solid. Loved every minute of it. When they first announced this show, the title, My Adventures with Superman, they put out some character designs, and like, it just seemed like it was just going to be more comedy than action, and Superman was going to take a backseat to Jimmy and Lois. Not the case at all. This is an action show and has some genuine humor. Absolutely loved season 1. And they put out a poster for season 2 as well. And Supergirl is on the poster. We get to see Supergirl at the end of this trailer. There is a big cliffhanger. It involves Krypton, Earth, Kryptonian soldiers. I'm excited. I'm excited for it. Now, in the US, it airs, or the premiere is on Adult Swim. The next day, it's available on Max. What they did here in Australia, as soon as the whole thing had aired in the US, we got the whole season on binge. So I'm assuming that's going to be the case with season 2 as well. So we might have to wait a little bit longer than the US. They get it May 25th.
Well, that's all right. It gives me time to finish off season 1, so I don't mind.
Yeah, more than enough time.
Yeah. Got to watch X-Men, though.
You really do. Despite previous reports, Doctor Who companion Millie Gibson is sticking around alongside new addition Wada Satu. So there you go. Apparently, it was a little bit of a misunderstanding, is what Gibson had to say. She's very much going to be in season two. So we did a whole news story about it a while ago. The fact that she's only doing one season. But no, false alarm. She's sticking around.
Yeah.
But they are adding a second companion.
I'm excited because I get to actually chime in on Doctor Who news. I remember saying when, you know, when we were talking about the fact that she was going to depart after one season, you know, after watching the, you know, that the special first episode, whatever it's referred to as, like, you know, got that, got the new Doctor Who, introduced to, you know, this Millie. I was like, she was quite delightful. Like, she seems like a character that, you know, as I'm now watching Doctor Who, can find myself investing in and stuff. But to know that she had an expiry date for the show, like only after a handful of episodes, she'd pretty much be done and out. I'm like, oh, okay, well, yeah, it kind of was a bit off-putting for like, let's not get too attached to her then, because bloody hell. But this is reassuring that she'll stick around for, because what's the usual time frame for a companion? Like two seasons?
It can vary. Billy Piper, you know, she was in season one of Chris Eccleston. She stuck around with Tennant for a couple of seasons. Then we got Catherine Tate as Donna Noble. Yeah, maybe two, three, but it really does vary. But if you think about
it, they usually get a few, right? Like to just get one is.
I mean, they can, yeah, maybe it's hard to say. I'd be like,
sure,
maybe Pond, Karen Gillan, like she was in it for, oh man, maybe four, five series. So she's the longest serving companion. But if you go back to, you know, Christopher Eccleston, that's going all the way back to like 2005. But where you are now, I think it's good for you that you've had that one Christmas special. They've introduced her as the new companion, and she's going to be sticking around for a while. Because the whole thing about it now being a co-production between BBC and Disney is that they're looking at, you know, reaching a wider audience. So someone like yourself, who's typically not watched it in the past, but is now watching it, it's better if they're giving you more reason to stick around instead of chopping and changing who the companions are going to be. But I think this is a good move, and I'm glad that she's back, because she really did have great chemistry with the Doctor.
Hey, look, halfway through the first season, like, we could find out that she's a shit-ass character. and everything we saw in that Christmas special.
And we know it was stuck with her, so there you go.
Yeah, so it was like, damn. So this could be bad news. Who knows? But from what I've seen, I like her so far. So. Even though I haven't really got much of, you know, many companions to compare it to, pretty much just got Billy Piper. But that's fine. Scooby-Doo, the live action series is in the works at Netflix. And who have we got?
We don't know too much.
That's all we know, I think, is Greg
Berlanti.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Greg Berlanti, he's involved, but we don't know too much more than that. Like, we don't know at the age of the Scooby gang. So we don't know anything. It's like straight away, as soon as you say live action Scooby-Doo, fans are demanding Matthew Lillard as Shaggy. It's like, well, steady. We don't know what this is going to be. If this is like Scooby in high school, you know, it wouldn't work, would it? But
if you look at Greg Berlanti, sort of his works and what the shows that he puts together and stuff. You know, you're thinking like the Arrowverse and stuff, right? So you're working with a younger-ish cast, teens to, you know, people in their 20s, that kind of realm. Cool. That when I first heard Berlanti attached this, I was like, okay, cool. Like, we're gonna have, you know, this could be pretty fun. You know, we're going to get, you know, a cartoony element to the live actionness, you know, like following things of, like, you know, the Arrowverse. Like, it wasn't afraid to delve into, you know, colors, costumes, things like that. So I'm like, okay, we could have fun. But then my brain thought, what else has Berlanti done? And it's like Riverdale. And then suddenly I was like, oh no. And something like Riverdale and Scooby-Doo kind of fits a little bit. You know, like it's that kind of thing. It's this old thing that they're doing a modern version of. I'm worried that they're going to go wacky with this Scooby-Doo.
And I just think they need to be careful, like, because I think what the approach that's going to work better for me, at least, is a straight adaptation of Scooby-Doo. Have it be live action, but also have it be Scooby-Doo. Look at what's happening with Velma. Season 2 has dropped, not just in the US. In Australia, on Binge, wasn't advertised. The whole thing has just been dumped. And they're doing something different and wacky. And it's just falling flat. People are hating it. And I watched season one.
People hate watching it.
Yeah. And do you know what? Screen Rant, you gits. What they did, they put together an image and then accompanying text. Spoil season two. It tells you who the big villain is. But why would they do such a thing?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares, though.
Well, the thing is, I didn't know I cared until I saw that. Because now I know who the villain is. I know, but why? I don't understand why you would do that. Unless it's out of spite. Like, why would you spoil it? Anyway, Scooby-Doo, live action, Netflix. Maybe it's more in line with... Maybe it's more Wednesday than Riverdale. With the horror angle. Well, actually... I've got some Wednesday casting. Steve Buscemi is joining the cast of. Honestly, I didn't plan this. He's joining the cast of Wednesday's second season, playing Nevermore Academy's new principal. Oh, look at that!
You know, it's always good to get Buscemi in things, even Absolutely. When he's rubbish. It's like, well, you know what? It's Steve Buscemi, so it's all good. this is cool. I think in the stylized world of Wednesday, of the Addams Family that we've got within this Wednesday show, I can see him, you know, like a pinstripe suit. His hair is just crazy, bonkers. You know, he's doing, for some reason, I'm picturing him with the crazy eyes from like
Mr. Deeds.
Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, whereas I'm thinking
Big
more,
Daddy or whatever.
Right. I'm thinking more hair slicked like Gomez when you said the pinstripe suit. But I can see, Steve Buscemi. He's a great fit for the Tim Burton verse. Yeah, I can see him fitting in nicely.
He'll either have glasses, like some sort of like very tiny gold rimmed glasses or a monocle. He's got to have something. He's got to have something that, I don't know, I can picture it now. He works. He seems to.
He really does.
Yeah, great. I can picture it.
Great bit of casting, and we're getting the new principal for obvious reasons. So yeah, cool. I really did enjoy that first season, so I'm looking forward to season two.
All right, well, look, that wraps up all of our news pretty much, but we've got some recommends for you. And what do you have for us?
I'm recommending a show that I absolutely loved. You know, sometimes you want to finish a series just to get it done. Just to get it watched. Yeah. This is not that kind of show. I was gutted when I'd finished it because I was loving every minute. The completely made-up adventures of Dick Turpin. Noel Fielding and Hugh Bonneville lead a stellar ensemble cast boasting of the cream of UK talent in the tongue-in-cheek reimagining of an iconic Highwayman. It is fantastic. It is only 6 30-minute episode. And like I said there, it really is a who's who of British actors, comedy actors. Greg Davies pops up. Oh, man, it's just so, so much fun. Have you checked it out? It's on Apple.
No, I no longer have Apple. At the minute, I don't have an Apple subscription. So I'm out of the lurch.
It's worth signing up. It is... Honestly, it is absolutely fantastic. From that first trailer, I knew it was for me and watched it with a wife and we both laughed our asses off. It is so much fun. It is really, really good. And it's like, oh, it's this person, it's that person from all these sitcoms from all the years of watching British telly. It's so much fun. It is brilliant. So the completely made up adventures of Dick Turpin. So if you get Apple again, check it out.
I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've actually not watched anything, you know, since we last recorded, like nothing new that, like, I thought a little part of me was like, I'm going to come to this, you know, a new show today and be recommending Knuckles, you know, started watching that. I just wanted, before I give you my recommend, I'm just going to tell you, I dislike the show. It's very upsetting. I don't like it.
Upsets me. And we're going to have to put a pin in that because you made a promise. I'm not quite sure if you promised or not, but you will be coming on Sounds Like Comics and we will be doing a full review.
I will finish it. But
I am sad for you though, because I know you were looking forward to it. I've not started it yet.
What I've done instead, it's a show that it's going to be a lot of build up for this show. It's an old show. And to be fair, one of us has probably recommended it before. This isn't anything new. It's an old show that wrapped up, I think, earlier, maybe late last year. I don't know. But I finally watched the last season of The Goldbergs. Now, I know this is an old show. And like I said, we've probably recommended it before. But I think I'm going to cheat and say specifically because I got nothing else. Season 10, the final season of The Goldbergs. If anything, I just wanted an excuse to talk about the fact that I finally finished it. And, you know, like it had a bit of a rocky period, couple of years with, you know, some certain deaths and, you know, like removals of, you know, Murray, the dad character and stuff. But this final season, it found its footing again and it took the show out. You know, it didn't end on this big boom of a final episode, you know, like no one was crying or anything like that, but it was consistently just like episode by episode, just like a bunch of laughs were had, just enjoyed spending one final, you know, 20 odd episodes with these characters that we spent a decade with. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Goldbergs. If not at this stage, here's my last ditch effort to get you guys on board, and maybe they'll bring it back in some other form. Who knows? But Adam F. Goldberg created the show based on his, you know, his years growing up in the 80s. What a wonderful time. Sorry I missed it. You know, Jeff Garlin, who isn't in this final season, but is the dad. Wendy McClendon Covey plays Bev, the mum. Sean Gambrion is Adam. Troy Gentile and Haley Arantxa as Barry, and what the hell's her name? Erica. Yeah, so we've got the family. There's a whole bunch of supporting cast members that shine a little bit more in this final season, I think, because of the removal of Jeff Garland's character. But they do a lot more with it, and they manage to, you know, approach stuff pretty well. Like, it's sweet, but they have fun with it, and it was just a nice final season. Just spent the week just churning through it with the missus, so we're done now. So The Goldberg season 10, hope this wasn't a cop-out recommend.
No, it's a really good recommended. Like, say, you know, capping off a decade, man, I used to love it. I used to absolutely love it. Yeah, no, I'm good. Yeah, and I'm going to stand by that. I did used to love it. And I'm sure I'd still find things to like about it now, but it did get old for me. And I even watched Schooled, the 90s spin-off. I think they did two seasons of that. You know, I was there, Schooled, the Goldbergs. But it just got to a point where, and I can't even remember if I'm honest, maybe it was around, it could have been season 7, but the wife and I would watch it. And we just... It took us so long to finish a particular season. And then when we watched that last episode, we both agreed, I think we're done. I think we've watched it enough. And we didn't get to a point where we stopped liking it. It just wasn't what it was before. In fact, you know, when Young Rock came out, I remember like thinking, maybe this is our new Goldbergs. You know, it had that kind of nostalgic feel to it. And I stopped watching that as well. But I'm going to take your... recommend, and I would like to find out exactly where I did stop and finish it, especially knowing now that it is completely finished. Did you watch it on Disney Plus? Is it all on there?
It's all on Binge.
All on Binge. Wow, it's an ABC.
Yeah, which was
production.
The main catalyst for us getting back onto it, because it was like, oh cool, we can easily watch this and keep track. Because I think we kept trying to go back, and then it was like, oh, we have no idea where we're up to. And it was, you know, it was a whole thing. But I think, like you, you know, like the show does have this thing of like, it does kind of get repetitive and it explores sort of the same things, and characters seem to never learn anything along the way. And I think that was part of the reason it took, you know, the wife and I so long to finish it. But you know, we turn it through. And again, like the seasons where, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes drama going on, it is kind of interesting watching all of that unfold. And it's like, you know, they keep Murray's character around with, like, you know, like archival footage and stuff. It's ridiculous. And it's so obvious. And it's just, yeah, it's such an icky time. But again, they bring it all back in this final season. It's a nice run. And it's just, it's very sweet watching, just like looking back and seeing, like, you know, sometimes when you watch a show for like 10 years, especially with a young cast, you're seeing them grow up. So you're seeing them, you know, just their characters, but at the same time, it's just like, wow, we've watched them grow up on screen. And yeah, there's something really sweet about it. So do it just to knock it off and send it off.
I can make you this promise. I will add it to my watch list. Let's, hey, let's start there.
Good enough. Good enough. All right. Well, on that, got you on board. That's it for another episode of That Film Stew.
If you haven't already, check out our other shows, Rewind and Review and Sounds Like Comics. Each of those shows also have their own Facebook pages.
If you missed it, be sure to check out our recent review of The Fall Guy and stay tuned for our upcoming review of Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver.
Thanks for joining us for another round of movie and TV news.
You've been listening to Jason.
And you've been listening to Luke.
We're the guys from That Film Stew. See you soon.